Good afternoon, and thank you for the introduction. Today I'll be talking about building a quality assurance program for the gas network in Latin America and the Caribbean. First, I wanted to talk about why we need a quality assurance program for gonorrhea. Over time, gonorrhea has developed resistance to all antibiotics we have used for its treatment. Now our latest antibiotics, the third generation cephalosporins, are at risk with resistant strains emerging. We need to control the spread of these resistant gonorrhea, and to do this, we need a surveillance program to monitor the resistance, inform treatment guidelines, and prompt public health interventions. And the key to the success of a surveillance program is involvement in a quality assurance program. A quality assurance program will promote standardization of results among participating laboratories, verify the performance of a test, and evaluate the continued reliability of it. It will monitor performance of test procedures, media, and technical staff. It will detect problems so that corrective and preventive action can be taken, and it will document competency. The Streptococcus and STI Center of the National Microbiology Lab administers a quality assurance program for the antimicrobial susceptibility of gonorrhea in Canada. It is called the National Gonococcal Antimicrobial Susceptibility Comparison Program. This Canadian program was started in 1992 by Dr. Joanne Dillon, our moderator today, as the chief and founder of the National Laboratory for Sexually Transmitted Diseases, or the NLSTD. The NLSTD later evolved into the Streptococcus and STI Center. This program was designed to standardize the Neisseria gonorrhea susceptibility testing data and maintain the comparability of data generated from the participating labs. There are presently 9 participants, which include 7 provincial health laboratories from across Canada, 1 university lab, and us. The International Gonococcal Antimicrobial Susceptibility Quality Control Comparison Program was a QA program that was also launched by Dr. Dillon as the director of GASP-LAC in 1997. The program started with 6 participating centers but grew to 10 by the end of the program. This program continued successfully until 1999 and is the predecessor to the Gonococcal Antimicrobial Susceptibility Comparison Program for Latin America and the Caribbean countries, the topic of my talk today. This program was reinitiated in 2013 by Dr. Dillon as the director of the GASP network in Latin America and the Caribbean. Interest and plausibility in reinitiating the program was first established. Then Dr. Dillon invited Irene Martin, my supervisor and the head of the Streptococcus and STI Center, to collaborate with her in order to optimize resources and use our capability and expertise to restart this critical aspect of the GASP program. Our Canadian program was used as a model. The first panel was sent in September of 2013 to 7 Latin American and Caribbean countries. They included Colombia, Venezuela, Paraguay, Bolivia, Chile, Cuba, and Uruguay. The panel included reference strain ATCC49226 plus 8 WHO isolates. The second panel for this program was sent in March of 2014. The countries that received this panel are Colombia, Paraguay, Chile, Uruguay, Argentina, Panama, and Peru. The University of Saskatchewan in Saskatoon, Canada, also participated on the behalf of GASP. This panel included 5 test isolates from Canada that were previously used in the Canadian QA program. Control strains were chosen to be used in this panel were ATCC49226, WHOF, G, K, and P. And these were chosen because they are the same control strains we use in our Canadian surveillance and our QA program. Minimum inhibitory concentrations, or MICs, for the isolates in the panels were determined by the participating laboratories for up to 8 antibiotics using agar dilution, e-test, or disc diffusion. The results were compiled by Dr. Dillon's staff and sent to us to run through our reporting software. The participant MICs were compared to the modal MICs calculated for each strain and antibiotic combination. A report summarizing the data for each panel was sent to each participant. The report for Gas Black Panel sent in September of 2013 is similar to the format of the Canadian Programs Report. This is Table 1, comparing all the MIC results from each participating lab with the modal MIC results. Modal MICs were calculated for each antibiotic and isolate. However, any MIC with a less than or greater than sign were excluded from the calculations. One lab submitted distiffusion results, which were converted into MICs and included in the modal MICs. In the far left column, we have the laboratory codes. Each participating laboratory has a lab code that doesn't change for the duration of the program. The codes allow for privacy of results between participants. The column on the far right shows the percentage of agreement between the results of each laboratory and the modal MICs. Agreement is defined as being within one doubling dilution of the modal MIC. CLSI recommends greater than or equal to 90% as a guideline for acceptability. The percent agreement was over 90% for most of the labs. One of the low percent agreements could be attributed to the conversion of distiffusion results to MICs. Table 2 shows the comparison of MIC results for each antibiotic obtained by all participating laboratories with the modal MICs. In this table, the antibiotics tested are in the far left column, as opposed to the lab codes. The percent agreement is in the far right column. This table enables us to determine if some antibiotics are more variable than others. Penicillin seems to have caused many of the discrepancies in this panel. Table 3 shows all the MICs submitted by the participants, what the collective modal MICs are, and which MICs were used to calculate them. Red font highlights the results that are not in agreement with the modal MICs or modal interpretations. Here, the MIC and the interpretation are incorrect. In this case, the MIC is within one doubling dilution of the modal MIC, but the interpretation is not the same as the modal interpretation. The green font highlights results that are not included in the calculations of the mode. ND means not done, so it's obviously not included. And as mentioned earlier, any MICs with less than or greater than signs are not included. If there's only one MIC, there is no modal MIC for that isolate. Also, if there is more than one modal MIC, then we don't use a modal MIC. This is Table 1 and 2 of the preliminary report for the second panel sent in March of 2014. We are still waiting for two participant results. The percent agreement ranges from 48.8% to 97.6%, with an average of 85.2%. If we take the outlier 48.8% out, the average would go up to 92.3%. This table is from our Canadian report. I wanted to show you it because it shows the comparison of duplicate isolates that were included in the panel. This type of table will be in the March 2014 Gas Black Panel's report. However, I was waiting to receive all results before preparing it. So in this panel, QC13312 and QC13314 were the same strain. Participants can check their reproducibility of their results by looking at this table. This is a summary of results from the panels that were sent in 1997 to 1999. The results are quite good, with most percent agreements over 90% as specified by CLSI. There are a number of challenges that were and are still being faced in this program. The different methodologies used by the different participants introduce some variability into results. Media and antibiotics used by the different labs also pose a challenge, as they are often from different suppliers and in some cases may not be available. I believe one of the countries that we are waiting for results on is having a hard, if not impossible, time getting some of the antibiotic powders for making the media. Different brands and sources of reagents used in the testing also contribute to the variability in results. Then there are the shipping challenges. Making sure all the appropriate paperwork is in order and available can be very time-consuming, and sometimes, even when everything is in order, it is still difficult to get the package out of customs. It can take longer than a week for a package to arrive at a destination, so the viability of the isolates is a concern. This was a problem for one of the participants in the last panel. they were only able to revive two of the five isolates that were shipped on two different types of media, plus this was the second time we had shipped it. Dry ice is very costly to ship and may not last long enough anyway. We have used Amy's transport medium, and we are looking to alternatives that will keep the gonorrhea viable for longer. In conclusion, surveillance of the antimicrobial susceptibility of gonorrhea is very important right now, with resistance to the latest antibiotics used for treatment emerging. Quality control and quality assurance is an absolute must for a successful antimicrobial susceptibility surveillance program. Despite the challenges, the GASPLAC QA program has had a good start and will continue to improve as these challenges are met. I would like to thank Dr. Joanne Dillon for asking us to make this presentation and for everything she has done to make the gonococcal antimicrobial susceptibility comparison program for GASPLAC happen. I would also like to thank Helena for all the coordination, communication, and translation she has done for the project. I would like to thank my supervisor, Irene Martin, the head of Streptococcus and STI Center at the NML, for helping me prepare this presentation and allowing me to come to the conference to present it. And of course, we wouldn't have a program if we didn't have laboratories willing to participate. So I'd like to thank the participating countries of the GASPLAC QA program for making the program possible.